This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. Last week, we saw Ruby at her wit's end after an agonizing wait to find out whether she and Edie will have to leave the house that has become their home. The solicitor's letter finally arrived, and Ruby was too afraid to open it. The strain has begun to take a toll on Ruby and Janice's relationship.
I'm sorry. Ruby knelt next to Edie on the floor of their room and rubbed her shoulder. Edie shrugged and hunched herself over the kitten, which let out a squeak of protest and scratched its way free.
Now look what you made Percy do, Edie wailed. And there's blood.
Come on, we'd better wash it. I'll put iodine on it.
No!
You'd rather get an infection, would you? Impetigo, at the least. In the bathroom, Edie yelped as Ruby dabbed the wound with yellow iodine-soaked cotton wool, setting off a new bout of sobbing.
Mum, don't you dare make Auntie Jan go away!
Edie sniffled.
You're busy all the time. I probably need two mums. There's no one else.
Ruby had to smile. Funny little chicken. Don't you go repeating that. What would people think? Would you like Janice to read you a story when you go to bed?
But she's not as good as Frank, Edie squeaked. He made funny voices. And he had this game of reading little bits out of different books. It was annoying at first because he never finished anything. And I wish he was here.
We can't wish him back. Ruby gave Edie's back a rub. Put it all out of your mind. There are things to be getting on with. Edie gave her a long, dark look.
There are always things to be getting on with. And I want to remember him forever.
All right, said Ruby. She sniffed the air. Your Auntie Jan is cooking something. Why don't you go and see what she's doing?
You coming, Mum?
Said Edie, on her way out of the room. As the elevator screeched and rattled its way down from the office of Peterson, Sanderson and Wick, Douglas looked like someone who had lost everything and dropped his last sixpence down a drain. His suit hung off him. His head drooped. His knuckles were white as he clutched the brim of his hat. Through the iron curlicues of lilac leaves, Ruby watched the staggered patterns of shadows as each staircase passed above them. Mr. Peterson's words were particles floating in her mind. The old man had had to repeat himself. She held her fingers across her mouth so her thoughts would not escape. Frank. The name came out of her no louder than a gasp. Frank, I can't believe what you've done. Shh, shh, shh. The shadow of him was with them. There were three of them going down to the ground floor and daylight. Douglas glanced at her.
Pardon? Did you say something?
No, she said. Didn't he feel him? Frank, standing behind them, pleased with himself. Douglas gave no sign. Instead, he seemed to have locked himself up. The cage bumped to a standstill at the ground floor. Douglas staggered as he wrenched open the iron concertina door, and she felt a flicker of sadness for him. She opened the outer door herself. On the pavement, she waited while he tapped the end of his cigarette on the cardboard packet. He lit it with shaking hands. It wasn't a Du Maurier this time. "You left your cigarette case," Ruby said. "I'm afraid I didn't bring it. I didn't know whether..."
"Don't worry about it," he said.
"Always with you, F.P. came to mind. Ruby drew her coat over her chest against the cold. She considered telling him she'd look after it, or reminding him that Frank would always be part of him, whatever happened to the silver case. His leaving it behind was not going to sever the thread.
"You're looking wonderfully well," he said, breaking their silence. "Quite beautiful."
What a strange thing to say. "Thank you," she said. The wind wrapped his trousers around his bones, and he pushed his hat further down onto his brow. He must know there were matters they ought to discuss, but she wasn't going to press him.
"I need a cup of tea," he said. "Will you join me?"
"All right," she said. A gust of wind blew them into the tea room. They found a table by the window. Douglas pulled out a chair for her. They sat opposite one another. "I am sorry," she said. His eyes narrowed as he lit his cigarette. For a moment, his smoke clouded the air between them.
"Forgive me," he said.
Ruby waited, ready to forgive him. He pushed the packet of Craven A forward.
"I should have offered you one."
She accepted, and he offered her the flame of his lighter, and she drew deeply. "Thanks."
"Are you sure you wouldn't like a sandwich or a bun?" said Douglas.
"You're out of luck," said the waitress, putting the teapot down heavily. "There's none left." "Doesn't matter," said Ruby. "I don't want anything." An aspirin or two wouldn't go amiss. What Mr. Peterson told them had added weight to the aggregate of guilt and grief sitting in her stomach, and her head ached. Douglas slowly wagged his head.
"It's certainly hard to take in."
"I am really so," she began again. Words were lost behind everything she dared not bring to the front of her mind. Thoughts that had nothing to do with gratitude. The dread of obligations pressed on her. She'd be hemmed in now. Did Frank know his intentions for Edie had thorns for her? Douglas poured the tea.
"Milk?"
"No." He dropped several sugar cubes into his cup and studiously stirred his tea. When they exchanged a glance, she saw the blue of his eyes had faded, and it pierced her. He'd lost more than Frank. What she had wrought had broken that innocence of his. It was a gasp. She wiped her tears with the flat of her hand. "Do we have to? I mean, can't we tell Mr. Peterson he has to change everything?" He blasted smoke out with a long breath.
"No. These things can't be changed."
"But it's all yours, surely. I can't just," she said.
"The house? That's nothing to me. No, I'm glad. That's what Frank wanted. He thought the world of Tink."
"What about you?"
if I decided to buy a place at all.
He took out his handkerchief and crumpled it in his fist.
It wouldn't be around here.
Her mouth dried. The tea was no longer hot. When she reached for the hot water, she saw her face distorted in the reflection on the silver jug. There's something about a bond of assurance, she said, turning the subject away.
Old Peterson said you can see him again if you need to go over things.
Yes, she said. He also said I should get my own solicitor.
I can recommend someone.
A town like this probably has solicitors everywhere, she said, burrowing away like borer in woodwork. Douglas's cup clinked down on the saucer.
And to think, his tone was dry. All this time I'd been buying him his smokes.
Ruby gave a wry smile. Wicked, wicked, Frank.
I did hear his grandfather had some grand house built for himself, back on the old days. Frank remembered it as a child. No one said what happened. Tides of fortune, I suppose.
He sucked on his smoke. Thoughts of Frank's father and Mrs. Pierce crossed Ruby's mind. Had Cyril gambled the old place away?
It seems Mrs. Pierce had been keeping secrets, sitting on what her father left her. It's staggering.
The young couple at the far table stood to leave. They were so young, not more than 17. The boy helped the girl with her coat. Their hands touched. They exchanged doting looks and kissed. Love. Douglas was a thoroughly decent man. He should be loved. He deserved to be. Come back to the house, she said, until things get settled.
How can I?
But you'll be staying in town, won't you? Now that you've got a property of your own to look after? A whole building, and shops as well.
I shouldn't think I'd need to stick around for that.
Won't you? She decided against telling him that Edie had asked after her Uncle Douglas night after night until she'd finally given up. After all, it wasn't true. Edie had said nothing about him.
The place up Rangitiki Street, he said. I know the place. 3-storied. Professional rooms and offices. Reliable tenants, apparently. And the little block at Terrace End. I imagine it all more or less just ticks along. There's an accountant for all that, I suppose. Peterson knows more. At least I won't have to sell brushes anymore.
Ruby watched him stub out his cigarette, crushing the butt into the ashtray with ferocity.
I'm glad he left £100 to the Opera Society, he said.
Icy air rushed in as the boy held the door open for his girl. The wind snatched at her beret, and he caught it for her, in exchange for a kiss before they parted. You could go to England, Ruby said, turning back to Douglas. Have a look at London's theatre scene. Then come back here and start your own company.
You don't know.
He didn't have to finish the sentence. He was right. She didn't know anything about it.
I don't know what I'll do, he groaned.
Ruby resisted the temptation to put a comforting hand on his wrist.
What about you? He said. What will you do?
Do?
Well, you'll be comfortably off, won't you? And you've got a sum coming to you, plus the annuity. You're set.
Set? She recalled the blatant accusation on his face that night when he'd left the house.
Did he really think that of her? Even now? Her eyes stung.
I mean, he said, mollifying his tone. You no longer have to go to work, do you?
The waitress was noisily clearing the vacated table, clattering china as she loaded her tray. I used to dream of having a little shop, Ruby said quietly, turning the notion around. But I like being at Vardo. I'll stay on. I'm fond of Madame. And of course there's Janice. Her knuckles went to her mouth. Janice. She'd have to think carefully before she told Janice anything.
I'm glad you've got a friend, said Douglas,
without a trace of malice. It would sound glib to tell him he'd find someone. Instead, Ruby said, I think the waitress wants us to leave. The open sign had already been turned around. The waitress began pulling cloths off tables. At the door, Douglas turned, his hand on the door handle.
Do you want a divorce?
What? She glanced around. The waitress had disappeared into the kitchen.
You could have me in court for desertion easily enough, he said.
You don't know anything about the world, do you? Her old ire erupted before she could stop it. It's all right for you. You can walk away scot-free. Make another life for yourself.
That's hardly fair.
What's hardly fair, Douglas, is the way a divorced woman gets treated like a leper in this world, whether the fault's hers or not. A divorced woman is an outcast. It's bad enough being a deserted wife.
Surely you're exaggerating, he spluttered.
For heaven's sake, Douglas, do you walk around with your head in a bucket? A woman in an apron had come out from the back to stare at them. Ruby lowered her voice. I'm sorry, Douglas. I shouldn't have lashed out like that.
Under the circumstances, no.
The butcher wouldn't take a phone order. The boy wasn't allowed to deliver the weekly meat unless I went in there and paid for it first, even though they know I paid them every fortnight without fail. All because my husband wasn't here to sign for it.
I didn't know. I'll have a word.
He was stuttering again. No need. I can manage, she said. After all, none of it was his fault. If anyone deserved to be an outcast, it was her. She bit her lip.
But you'll be as good as any householder now, he said. You have means. That must carry some weight as far as respectability goes.
Honestly. She had to smile. The remnants of that boy, confounded by the world, was in him still.
I only asked, he said, about a divorce in the event you might want to get married one day. Properly, I mean.
Oh, pfft.
I was terribly fond of you, you know.
His eyelids dropped. I was fond of you. What does it mean when it comes down to it? There wasn't any point telling him the love she had for him was more than she could understand.
We'd best go, he said. I'm parked round the corner. Shall I give you a lift?
No, it's all right. Thank you for the tea. Before he could stop her, she reached up and kissed him on the cheek. He flinched. Do you know the last thing Frank said to me that night? She put her hand on his arm and looked into the faded eyes. He said you had the heart of a lion. Mucus and tears erupted from him all at once.
He was wrong.
He shook out his handkerchief and blew his nose.
He didn't know.
Let's at least shake hands, she said when he'd recovered himself. Like friends. The word had a sour taste. He grasped the fingers of her hand, gave it no more than two shakes and pulled his hand away. Dear Douglas, she took a breath. There'll always be a room for you.
No, he said.
The cold of his hand had penetrated her glove. It was still on her palm as she walked away. Ruby wished she'd added, for Frank's sake. But she had begun to stride off and didn't want to look back. If she did, all the pain inside her would have choked her, and she'd start blubbering. She squared her shoulders and lifted her chin. I just have to carry on, don't I? She muttered. Oil and coal from a locomotive at the railway station tainted the wind that blew through the streets and pushed her forward. Mr. Peterson had declined the money she'd taken out of the post office for the back rent. She had it in her purse on top of the crumpled letter, next to the papers he'd given her. Telling Edie about what Frank had done could wait until she came of age. Whoever heard of a 10-year-old becoming a house owner? Was Frank mad? Mr. Peterson said it was all above board. More than that, he approved. Frank had had the will made out the day after the wedding. The paperwork was full of stipulations. Apparently, she could do what she thought best with the contents and chattels. Frank certainly had a knack for grandiose irony. Ruby had a new knot in her stomach. Mr. Peterson had made responsibility for maintenance and upkeep sound serious. So she was a caretaker. Humph. Edie was to have music lessons. Mr. Peterson had mentioned a Miss Rawlins. He'd scribbled it down for her. More than that, Ruby was tasked to make sure Edie furthered her education. University. Tink. Edie. Edie would have everything she needed on a silver platter. Still, it was what Ruby had always wanted for her, wasn't it? Safety, security, the chance for respectability. And herself? How could she have known her dream would ruin the lives of two of the best men? How would she ever atone for what it had cost? Around the corner, she stepped between cars, angle parked to the curb, watching for a chance to cross. Next to her sat a maroon and black Austin 7, needing a good polish. A modest, respectable little car, that. Old, pre-war, serviceable. One of those couldn't cost very much, could it? And there was nothing ostentatious about an old Austin 7. People couldn't accuse her of being a spendthrift or getting above herself if she had one of those. She'd been saving, as best she could. One day, she might look in the for sale columns. The afternoon was getting dull. Edie would be waiting, and Janice. Her watch said 5:25. She crossed the road at a brisk clip and headed towards Garner's department store.
Can I be of assistance?
The ruddy-cheeked young man had eyes that quickened with eagerness to please. An older chap stopped arranging things on shelves and cast an eye in their direction. That might be old Mr. Garner, approving the boy's manners. I'm here to buy an electric kettle, Ruby told him. The ridge of the gold band on her finger was under her glove as she held her old purse ready for opening. How scruffy it was, the leather badly furred on the corners and scarred around the clasp. She took it off the counter and tucked it under her arm.
"I want the best," she told the assistant with a lift of her chin. "The latest one you've got. It's to be delivered. And if you've got a moment, I'd like to have a look at what you've got in the way of new stoves. I'm just looking today."
The image of Frank appeared at the back of her mind. His eyes gleaming, head thrown back, roaring with laughter.
"You'll do."
The end.
You've been listening to the final episode of A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel written by Rachel DeRay and narrated by Roby Hooper. To find the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/A Respectable Veneer or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.